For the next hour, Chesterfield Pike, Beau, and Scratch made their way down from the heights, carefully testing each foothold and handhold before they trusted their weight to it. As they descended through the rugged landscape, they could hear the shots coming from the vicinity of Hornpipe Rock as Steve North and his men continued to swap lead with the rustlers. That was a good sign, because it meant that North and the Star Ranch Punchers were still alive. Pike led Beau and Scratch around a large boulder, and then stopped so short that the Texans almost ran into his broad back.
Oh, that don't look good.
Pike leaned to one side so they could see past him. A ledge, little more than a foot wide, ran for nearly 100 yards along a cliff face above a 50-foot drop. Just as dangerous as the distance, though, was the fact that at the bottom lay one of the lava flows. Those razor-sharp black rocks could slice a man into ribbons if he fell into them, especially from such a height. No one would survive a tumble like that.
Any way around it?
Not that I can see.
Well then, we'll just have to be careful. Let's rest a minute and catch our breath before we start across.
But even as they paused, the distant sounds of gunfire seemed to be trying to prod them into motion again. None of them could bear to stand there for very long doing nothing while North and his men were still under siege.
All right, let's give it a try. I'll go first.
Nope. Better let me. I weigh the most, so if that ledge is gonna crumble, you'll do it under me. If it holds me up, you'll know it'll hold you fellas too.
That made sense, so Beau motioned for Pike to go ahead. The giant shuffled out onto the ledge, facing the cliff and pressing his big hands against the rock. He moved sideways, sliding each foot in turn, and soon had covered 20 or 30 feet without mishap.
He's gone far enough. I'm starting out there too.
Be careful. I'll bring up the rear, I reckon.
Beau followed Pike's example, facing the cliff and shuffling along the ledge. The ledge itself seemed sturdy and was fairly level, so if a fella could make his mind forget the big drop that was at his back, then making his way along here wasn't really that difficult. Seeing movement from the corner of his eye, Beau turned his head and saw Scratch starting out onto the ledge as well. It took a good 10 minutes for all three of them to reach the other end of the ledge, but they all made it safely. After that, going became a little easier, and Beau noticed after a while that the shots were louder now.
You're leading us around behind the rustlers, aren't you, Chesterfield?
That's what you wanted, ain't it?
That's exactly what I wanted. If we can take them by surprise, maybe we can get North and the others out of that trap.
A few minutes later, they emerged from a long, narrow ravine and found themselves at the base of the flat-topped spire from which the rustlers had been firing at the defenders of Hornpipe Rock. Beau, Scratch, and Pike all went belly down as they spotted a couple of men holding some horses.
Looks like the whole gang is up there trying to root out North. Except for those two they left with the horses.
You can see the trail winded back and forth up the rock. That's how they got to the top.
If we can get past those hombres without them giving the alarm, the rest of the bunch won't have any idea we're behind them until it's too late. Yes, but first we gotta get past those two. Chesterfield, how you feel about being a Trojan horse?
I don't know. Is that anything like being mule-headed?
Not exactly. Here's what we're gonna do.
A couple of minutes later, the two men holding the gang's horses and standing guard at the base of the rock reached for their guns in surprise as they saw a giant form striding toward them. They drew the weapons, but held their fire as they noted that Pike was carrying two limp, apparently either lifeless or unconscious forms, one under each arm.
Hold it right there, mister.
These are two of the fellas you're looking for. I'll trade them to you.
Who the hell says we're interested in a trade?
Well, they don't mean nothing to me. Yeah, they locked me up. They're deputies from Whiskey Flats. Now, they made me come along and help them find the trail through the breaks, but as far as I'm concerned, you can have them.
You reckon he's telling the truth?
I know this fella. He's always been a troublemaker, not the sort to help the law unless he had to.
Well, then maybe he really did turn on. Let's see those deputies, Pike. Are they dead?
Not hardly.
Suddenly, Pike let go of Beau and Scratch, who dropped to the ground and caught themselves on their hands and feet as they landed. Pike sprang ahead, moving with speed surprising in such a big man, sort of like the deceptive speed of a charging grizzly bear. He grabbed both rustlers and slammed them together. The collision jolted the guns out of their hands, but didn't knock them out. They writhed in Pike's grip and swung frantic fists at his head. Bo brought the butt of his Colt down on the head of one rustler, who went limp and slid out of Pike's hand. At the same time, Scratch slammed the barrel of a Remington against the other man's head. Pike dropped him as well.
That one fella was right. I always been a troublemaker. I always lost my temper and raised hell every time I came into the settlement, like tossing that tin-horned gambler through Dodge Emerson's window.
That's in the past, Chesterfield. You've been a lot of help to us.
Hell, without you, we wouldn't even be here.
As far as I'm concerned, you've more than justified being made a temporary deputy. Maybe, if you talk to Marshal Braddock about it, you might convince him to make it permanent.
Really? I never had no real respectable job like that. Folks might look at me differently if I was a real deputy. They wouldn't think I was such a monster.
You're no monster, Chesterfield. Let's tie these hombres up and then see about getting a drop on their friends.
The firing was intermittent now. When the two rustlers had their hands and feet lashed together, Pike started toward the trail that led up to the top of the spire, but Bo stopped him.
Better let me and Scratch go first this time.
Yeah, this is liable to be gun work.
I'll be right behind you, though.
North and his boys must be running short on ammunition by now.
Not to mention getting hungry and thirsty.
They slowed as they neared the top of the trail. Bo took off his hat and risked a look. No trees grew on top of the spire, but it was dotted with boulders and brush. The rustlers were crouched behind rocks as they fired toward North and his men. Confident that no danger lurked behind them, they didn't even glance in Bo's direction. Scratch edged up alongside Bo and joined him in studying the layout.
I'm making an even dozen of the varmints. Gonna give him a chance to surrender?
I've never been one to shoot a man without giving him a fair break.
Yeah, but you'll consider it now, won't you?
I don't reckon we got much choice in the matter. There are just too blasted many of them.
Yeah, sort of the way I looked at it, too. Make every shot count, old hoss.
Crouching, the Texans moved up from the trail onto the flat top of the spire itself. They walked forward, getting as close to the rustlers as they could before opening fire. No shots at all were coming now from the men holed up under Hornpipe Rock. Either North and his cowboys had run out of cartridges, or they had spotted Bo and Scratch closing in on the rustlers and were holding their fire so the Texans wouldn't be threatened by any stray slugs. Scratch and Bo were within 30 feet of the nearest rustler when the man's instincts must have warned him. The man who had tried to warn his companions was driven backward by Scratch's bullet slamming into his chest. He flopped under some brush. Bo drew a bead on another man and fired. His slug broke the hombre's gun arm between the shoulder and elbow and sent him spinning to the ground. The others whirled around to confront this new threat. Bo squeezed off a shot, shifted his aim, and fired again. He pivoted and saw smoke spurt from the barrel of a gun just as he drew a bead on the man holding that gun and triggered his own shot. Beside him, Scratch had both of the long-barreled Remingtons working. He was almost as good with his left hand as he was with his right. Suddenly, there was a hitch in his stride, and his left leg threatened to fold up underneath him. He stiffened it and kept going, ignoring the fiery pain from the bullet burn on his thigh. 8 of the 12 rustlers were down, either lying motionless in death or writhing in pain. But that still left 4 of them, so Bo and Scratch were still outnumbered, and the hammers of their guns were about to fall on empty chambers. That was when Chesterfield Pike rushed past them, roaring like the grizzly bear he resembled, as his long legs carried him right into the midst of the rustlers. They were too startled by the brazen attack to get out of his way, and he grabbed up 2 of them like sacks of flour and ran toward the edge of the spire, which was less than 20 feet away. It looked like Pike was going to run right off the brink with the 2 men still in his grip, but he threw on the brakes just before he ran out of room and slung the luckless rustlers ahead of him. Pike's assault was so shocking that the other 2 rustlers had forgotten about Bo and Scratch. When they realized their mistake and tried to swing their guns up again, the Texans' weapons blasted a split second faster.
It's a good thing that's the last of them. I'm plumb empty.
Me too. Better reload. Some of those other hombres could still have some fat in them.
That proved not to be the case. In fact, all 12 of the rustlers were dead. The ones who hadn't been killed immediately had bled to death.
At least we got the 2 we took prisoner down below. I want to question him, find out who they're working for. Chesterfield, you recognize any of these men?
I don't recollect ever seeing any of them before.
Not in any of the saloons and whiskey flats, especially Emerson's place?
Nope, I'm sure of that. I never saw any of them in Mr. Emerson's saloon.
Well, now that don't hardly make any sense. I had Emerson figured as the fellow who was behind the rustling.
So did I, but it's starting to look like we were wrong. Chesterfield, I hate to ask it of you, but do you reckon you can carry these fellas down to their horses? We ought to take them back to town.
Sure. I reckon I've carried worse things in my life.
Pike bent and picked up two of the corpses, carrying them like he had carried Bo and Scratch earlier when they had fooled the rustlers holding the horses. When they got to the bottom of the trail, they stopped short.
Gone! Dad! Gummit! We tied those fellas up good! They shouldn't have been able to get loose!
One of them must have had a knife, was able to get his hands on it. We didn't really take the time to search them. Reckon we should have.
How are we gonna find out who they were working for?
Maybe somebody in town will recognize one of them. We might get a lead that way.
Steve North and his men rode up while Bo, Scratch, and Pike were loading the last of a dozen dead men on their horses. The two rustlers who had fled had been in such a hurry to get away that they had taken only their own mounts.
We saw you wiping out those varmints and figured it was safe to go round up our horses. Never saw anything like that before in all my born days. Don't mind telling you, sent chills down my back to where you fellas just marched right ahead like that, shooting down those wide loopers one after the other.
Scratch gestured toward his left leg, where a blood-stained rag was tied around his thigh.
It ain't like we got off without even being nicked. Reckon I'll live, though.
Anything me and my boys can do to help you?
No. We can take these bodies back to Whiskey Flats.
We'll start rounding up those cows that are stashed in the valley, then. It'll be a big job getting them back out and sorting out Chet Bascom's stock from mine.
I reckon the feud between the two of you is over now?
I reckon so. Chet and me got more in common than differences. We're both stubborn damn fools falling for a stunt like this and blaming each other.
Don't feel bad. That was exactly what you were supposed to do, according to the fellow who laid out this plan.
You got any idea who that might be?
Not yet. One thing you and your men can do before you go, take a look at these bodies and see if you recognize any of them.
That effort proved to be just as futile as Pike's study of the corpses. North and his punchers didn't know any of them.
I can tell you this much. They must have been mighty careful to steer clear of Whiskey Flats. Otherwise, we would have seen at least a few of them around the saloons on the south end of town.
Yeah, that's the way it looks to me, too.
North lifted a hand in farewell as he turned his horse away. His men followed him as he rode toward the valley where the stolen cattle were hidden. He had brought Bo and Scratch's horses with him, as well as Pike's mule, so they were able to mount up as well and head for Whiskey Flats, leading the rustlers' horses carrying their grisly burden. The ride out of the breaks and back to the settlement took the rest of the day. It was after dark when the group reached Whiskey Flats. Bo, Scratch, and Pike had decided to keep moving when night fell. None of them wanted to camp out with a dozen corpses for company. As they approached the town from the north, Bo was surprised to see that not very many lights were burning in the buildings. It wasn't that late. Some of the businesses should have still been open.
Hold up, you two. Something's wrong. There's no music coming from the saloons.
The saloons never close down.
It's mostly dark south of the bridge, too. Let's take it slow and easy until we know what we're riding into.
They started forward again. But they hadn't gone 50 yards before a challenge rang out from a clump of trees close to the trail.
Hold it, whoever you are. Don't come any closer or we'll shoot.
Hold your fire. What in blazes is going on here?
Well, at least they're not Apaches.
In the time Bo and Scratch had been gone from Whiskey Flats, word had leaked out about the raid on the Thompson Ranch. Well, that came as no surprise. The news probably would have been announced by Mayor Jonas McHale at a town meeting by now, if the brewing range war between the Rocking Bee and the Star hadn't cropped up.
No, we're not Apaches. I'm Deputy Creel, and Deputy Morton and Deputy Pike are with me.
Deputy Pike? You don't mean that big galoot Chesterfield Pike?
Where's Marshal Braddock?
In his office, I reckon. Him and that red-headed Rawhide Abbott are getting the town ready to defend itself from those bloodthirsty Redskins who wiped out that poor Thompson family.
There was less than a dozen Apaches in that war party. They ain't about to attack a whole blame town, even with new rifles.
I know. Folks don't think too straight, though, when they see something like what happened at the Thompson spread. We're riding on in. Keep your fingers off the triggers, boys.
Go ahead, Deputy. Best be careful, though. Folks are a mighty nervous right now. Say, what the hell you got there, Deputy? Those look mighty like dead men.
There's a good reason for that. That's what they are. These are the men responsible for the rustling that's been going on around here recently. They'll be at the Undertaker's. When you get a chance, go by there and see if you recognize any of them.
Sure thing, Deputy.
The sentry stepped out of the shadows and lifted a hand in farewell as the party rode on. They stopped at Ed Chamberlain's. The place was dark, but Chamberlain was obviously still awake because he stepped out onto the porch with a shotgun in his hands.
It's a pure relief to see you, boys. When I heard horses coming, I was afraid they were Indian ponies.
Got some business for you, Mr. Chamberlain.
I see that. Who do you have there, Deputy?
A gang of rustlers that have been causing so much trouble hereabouts. Take a good look at them. See if you know any of them, Mr. Chamberlain.
Oh, I sure will. Just leave them right there. Me and my helpers will tote them in.
Bo, Scratch, and Pike turned the corpses over to Chamberlain and then headed for the marshal's office. A small light burned inside the building.
Bo! Scratch! God, it's good to see you again. I didn't know when you would get back, and folks are going crazy over this Apache business.
You can't blame them for being worried, not after what happened to the Thompsons. What happened? Did you find the rustlers?
They're down at the Undertaker parlor right now.
You killed them? All of them?
Except for a couple that got away. And we found most of the cattle they stole, hidden away in a little valley on the other side of the Malpais breaks beyond North Range. There won't be any range war between the Star and the Rockin' Bee.
I poke into that mess for weeks and don't get anywhere, and you ride out for 2 days and come back with it all cleared up.
Well, I reckon we're just lucky, if you can call getting nearly killed half a dozen times being lucky.
Did Pike behave himself?
He did more than that. He found the wrestler's hideout and saved our bacon several times. You might think about making that deputy's job permanent, Marshal.
Yeah, I guess I could. We'll see, Pike. You gotta answer for those charges against you first.
Yeah, I know that, Marshal. But I'd be right pleased if you'd consider keeping me on after that.
Let's go inside and see if we can figure out what to do about this Apache business.
The five of them went into the Marshal's office. The cell block door was open, and Bo could see that the cells were all empty. Everybody was too worried about being attacked by Indians to cause any trouble, he supposed.
First of all, I don't think the settlement is in any danger from the Apaches. The war party that attacked the Thompson Ranch was too small to threaten the town, even with new rifles. They'll steer clear of Whiskey Flats.
But just because the bunch that wiped out the Thompsons was small doesn't mean there isn't a bigger war party out there.
Other than the fact that most of the Apaches are over in Arizona territory or below the border in Mexico. Now, this was just an isolated band of renegades out for blood.
You can't be sure of that. Anyway, since they were able to get their hands on those rifles, that might draw even more of them over here. Whoever sold them the guns needs more customers.
That's a good reason to get to the bottom of that gun smuggling now.
How do you suggest we go about doing that?
We got somebody bringing in guns to sell to the Indians, and we've got somebody who set up that rustling scheme so that Chet Bascom and Steve North would blame each other for the stock they were losing. What I'm wondering is if the same somebody is behind both plans.
We got no reason to think that. One don't have to have anything to do with the other.
But how likely is it that two varmints capable of coming up with such schemes will be here in Whiskey Flats?
Bo may be on to something. It'd take a smart man, and there aren't that many around here. Well, not outlaw smart anyway. But Dodge Emerson could do it. By God, I wouldn't put either one of them schemes past him.
What we need is some way to tie those rustlers in with Emerson. If we had that leverage, we might be able to find out if he's got anything to do with running guns to the Apaches, too.
I've got a whole bunch of new reward dodgers in here. Came in from Santa Fe with yesterday's mail. That's how the folks here in town found out about what happened to the Thompsons. The stagecoach that makes that run had a horse throw a shoe, and the driver detoured over to the ranch to see if anybody there could take care of it. He found the burned-out ruins and the fresh graves and unhitched one of the team to gallop on into town to warn everybody.
He didn't have any passengers on this run, so he just brought the mail pouch with him.
Once the news was out, I didn't see any point in keeping any of it secret. I explained what we found to Mayor McHale and had him break the news to the citizens, just like we talked about, Bo. He was sure unhappy when I showed him those brand-new Winchesters we brought back from out there. Folks didn't like it much when they found out we knew about the Apaches and didn't tell anybody.
Let's see those wanted posters. Scratch and I studied the faces of those dead rustlers. Maybe one of them will turn up.
Riley took the thick stack of papers from the desk drawer and handed them to Bo. With Scratch looking over his shoulder, Bo began to go through them, taking a good look at the pictures drawn on each of them. It was a hard-bitten, desperate-looking bunch of owl hoots. Bo's fingers suddenly tightened on one of the posters, and he sensed Scratch tensing beside him.
Ain't that...
Yeah, it sure is.
One of the rustlers?
Nah, just a fella we ran into once. You don't have to worry about him being mixed up in the rustling or the gun running, though. He's dead.
No doubt about it.
And no need for this poster to be cluttering up the place.
Bo folded the paper and thrust it inside his coat. He went back to studying the others. But after a few minutes, he shook his head and tossed the stack back onto the desk.
You didn't recognize any of them?
Only that one, and it doesn't have anything to do with this. Whoever brought those hard cases in to handle the wrestling must have sent for them in some other territory, told them to lie low once they got here. He's a smart son of a gun, whoever he is.
What do we do now?
Try to convince people there's no reason to panic, I suppose. That can wait until morning. This town looks like most folks have already hunkered down for the night, so we won't disturb them.
You tell you the truth, I wouldn't mind getting some shut-eye. I thought I wanted a big steak from Miss Dearborn's place first thing when we got back, but I reckon I'm tired than I am hungry. Anyway, it was dark over there. I wouldn't want to wake her.
Scratch and Chesterfield and I will take our horses over to the livery stable and tend to them. Then we'll come back here and trade off getting some rest while one of us stands guard the rest of the night. You can go back to the hotel, Marshal, and I reckon you can go on home, Rawhide.
All right. We'll figure out everything in the morning, I guess.
All we can do.
Bo, Scratch, and Pike left the office, untied their mount's reins from the hitch rail out front, and led the horses and the mule up the street toward the stable. The town was quiet and dark, although the feeling of tension in the air dispelled the idea that everyone was sleeping peacefully. The settlers were too on edge because of their fear of the Apaches. The doors of the stable were locked, and no light showed in the office window.
Let's go around back. Maybe that door will be unlocked, and if it's not, Ike's quarters are back there. We can knock and wake him up.
They led the horses and the mule around the big barn and into the shadows at the rear of the structure. Surprisingly, a light was visible back here, although it was only a narrow line that came through an inch-wide gap where the rear door was ajar.
Well, somebody's up. Must be...
Trip over something?
Yeah. Hold on a minute.
Scratch dropped to one knee and felt around in the darkness, finding an old blanket that he pulled aside.
I didn't like the feel of it either. I think... Yeah. Take a look at this, Bo.
Bo took a match from his pocket and used his thumbnail to snap the Lucifer to life. He bent over so that the glow from the flame washed over the figure of a man lying on his back. He recognized the man's face.
It's Ike, and he ain't ever gonna spread any more gossip because somebody stove his head plumb in.
Bo checked for a pulse, just to make sure. It took only a moment to confirm that the hostler was dead all right.
Maybe a horse kicked him in the head.
If that had happened, Mikhail would have sent for the doctor or for Ed Chamberlain if he knew it was too late to help Ike. Somebody hauled him out here and had covered him up so he wouldn't be found right away. It's just pure luck you tripped over him. To me, that adds up to murder.
Merton!
Bo clamped his free hand on Pike's arm to silence him. If Ike's murderer was still inside the barn, Bo didn't want to warn him that they were out here. He shook the match out and dropped it, then slipped his Colt from its holster.
Let's have a look. Chesterfield, stay behind Scratch and me.
They cat-footed toward the door. Bo put his hand on it and eased it open more.
Now, we have to be careful. Once things have quieted down, we can dig up those crates. My plans have been postponed, that's all. We'll still make a fortune off those rifles.
Scratch heard it, too, and looked over at Bo, mouthing, "Mikhail?" Bo nodded. Jonas Mikhail owned the freight line that ran between Whiskey Flats and Santa Fe. He could have bought the rifles in Santa Fe and smuggled them into Whiskey Flats along with the regular freight his wagons carried. Then they could be slipped out of town a few at a time and sold to the Apaches. It made sense. Bo pushed the door back a little farther. He saw Mikhail now. The mayor stood holding a lantern while two men struggled to move a heavy crate into a hole that had been dug in an empty stall. Bo recognized both men. The last time he had seen them had been earlier today out in the breaks. They were the rustlers who had been holding the horses, the pair of varmints who had gotten away. Their presence here in the livery stable, following Mikhail's orders, was proof that the mayor was behind both the rustling and the gun running. Just as Bo had begun to wonder about in the marshal's office, one man had come up with both plans. Obviously, having a successful business and being the mayor of Whiskey Flats wasn't enough for Jonas Mikhail. Greed and ambition had prompted him to cross the line into lawbreaking.
That's too bad about Ike. Usually he sleeps like a log. Once he saw what we were doing there, though, I knew we couldn't trust him to keep his mouth shut.
I'm a mite surprised you took care of him yourself, boss. Fella like you usually don't want to get his own hands dirty.
Just get those guns covered up now.
Scratch had filled his hands with his Remingtons, and by the look on his face, Bo knew that his partner was ready to crash in there and settle the score for everything Mikhail had done. Since the two rustlers had their hands full and Mikhail didn't appear to be armed, Bo figured he and Scratch could get the drop on the men fairly easily. He was about to nod when somebody pounded on the front doors of the barn.
Mayor? Mayor Mikhail, are you in there?
What the hell's he doing here?
Marshal, is that you?
Yeah, sorry to bother you, Mayor, but have you seen my deputies, Creel and Morton? They came over here to put up their horses, but I thought they'd be back by now. They were supposed to come back to the office.
I haven't seen them, Marshal. Sorry.
Damn it. Wonder where they could be.
Bo nodded to Scratch and Pike and then stepped forward, leveling his Colt.
We're here, Marshal. Mikhail, unlock that door.
The two rustlers were half in and half out of the hole where they were burying the rifles. At the sound of Bo's voice, they dropped the crate and clawed at the guns on their hips.
Kill them!
Mikhail slung the lighted lantern right into a big pile of straw. The dry stuff went up almost like it was as combustible as coal oil. The rustlers opened fire as the flames leaped up.
Pike, get down!
Bo went one way and Scratch went the other. Outlaw lead whistling through the air between them where they had been a heartbeat earlier. Bo dropped to a knee and squeezed off two shots, both of them hitting the rustler closest to him. The man slid all the way into the hole. He landed on top of the crate and struggled to bring his revolver into line for another shot.
Oh!
Bo fired again, and this time the slug bored a hole in the rustler's forehead. Meanwhile, both of Scratch's Remingtons roared as he limped hurriedly to the side. The bullets hammered into the other rustler, who folded up and collapsed on top of his dead comrade. That left Mikhail to bring to justice, but the fire had already spread across the stable so that the flames blocked the Texan's view of the entrance. They heard shots, but couldn't see what was going on. Bo whirled to Chesterfield Pike, who was scrambling to his feet after having dived to the ground when Bo warned him.
You all right, Chesterfield?
Yeah, fine.
Go around the back of the barn and spread the word about the fire. We need to get a bucket brigade going before it spreads.
Pike nodded in understanding and dashed out the rear door of the barn.
You see Mikhail?
No, he must have gone out the front. Maybe the marshal stopped him.
We can't get through that fire. Come on.
They ran out the back as Pike had done and circled toward the street, hoping that they wouldn't be too late. As they rounded the corner of the big building, smoke began to boil from the doors and the opening into the hayloft. The garish orange light of the flames spilled into the street. Its glare revealed Jonas Mikhail backing away, a desperate look on his face as he pressed a gun to the head of Rawhide Abbott. His other arm was looped around Rawhide's neck, pressing cruelly against her throat. Facing them about 12 feet away was Jake Riley, gun in hand, an anxious expression on his face. Bo and Scratch hadn't seen what had happened, but it was easy enough to figure out. That was Rawhide's pistol Mikhail gripped in his hand. She must have been with Riley when he came over to the livery stable in search of the Texans, and the renegade mayor had grabbed her when he rushed out, jerking her gun from its holster and taking her hostage with her own weapon.
I'll kill her! I swear I will unless somebody brings me a horse!
But you're the mayor!
Not until this little bitch's father finally died. I worked as hard for this town as Norman Abbott ever did, but never got any of the credit. I couldn't even get elected mayor until he was dead!
Bo came up on one side of Riley, Scratch on the other.
So you decided to make as much money as you could and get your revenge on the town at the same time. You tried to start a range war between Bascom and North that would have spilled over into the settlement, and you got the idea of selling rifles to the Apaches, too. Maybe you thought you could prod them into attacking the town and wiping it out.
What? Mikhail did all that?
That's right. He's plumb loco with hate and greed. Now maybe he's going to be responsible for the whole town burning down.
It's what the place deserves.
Fire! Fire!
Behind Bo, Scratch, and Riley, the street was filling up with people as the settlers rushed out of their houses in response to Chesterfield Pike's thunderous shouts. Men yelled and ran to get buckets to form a bucket brigade that would stretch from the public well to the stable. Flames were eating at the building's roof by now. With all the chaos ensuing from the blaze, nobody seemed to be paying any attention to the small drama being played out by the light of the flames.
Get me a horse! I'm riding away from here, and nobody's gonna stop me.
Let go of my deputy.
The hell I will. This red-headed bitch is coming with me, so you won't get any ideas about chasing me down. You'll give me a day's head start, or she dies.
No. You're under arrest, Mayor.
You sure you know what you're doing, Marshal?
I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm doing my job, Deputy. Are you going to surrender, Mikhail?
Go to hell!
Riley lifted his gun and sighted carefully over the barrel.
Here's the thing. I figure I can put a bullet through your brain and kill you before you can pull the trigger, Mikhail. You know why I believe that? I figure I can do that because I'm John Henry Braddock.
You son of a bitch!
Ah! Riley rocked back as Mikhail's bullet crashed into his body. Rawhide twisted in his grip, slammed an elbow back into his belly, and tore free. She lunged away from him, throwing herself to the street out of the line of fire. Riley had held off on the trigger of his own gun until Rawhide was clear. Then he fired. Bo's Colt and Scratch's twin Remingtons roared at the same time, four slugs smashing into him at once. The gun flew out of his hand. He landed hard on his back. His arms and legs twitched a couple of times, and then he lay still, staring sightlessly at the night sky as it was lit up by the hellish glare of the flames. As Rawhide scrambled to her feet and ran to Riley's side, Scratch stalked forward, keeping both guns trained on Mikhail just in case the man had any fight left in him. Scratch towed his shoulder, making Mikhail's head loll loosely.
Dead.
That's good, I reckon. I never would have taken Mikhail for the man behind all this, but he made it pretty clear that he...
Riley's head tipped back and his knees folded up underneath him as he dropped to the ground.
John Henry! Damn it! His shirt's all bloody! He's hurt! Oh, John Henry, blast your hide! Don't you die! Somebody get him to the doc's house!
Chesterfield Pike stepped up, bent over, and picked up Riley, cradling his body gently in massive arms.
I've been helping out with the Bucket Brigade, but it looks like they're going to keep the fire from spreading. I'll take the marshal down to the docks, Miss Rawhide.
Be careful with him.
Rawhide went with them, half running alongside Pike to keep up with the giant's long strides.
You reckon he'll be all right?
I hope so. If he is, I got a feeling that Whiskey Flats has found itself a marshal for real.
Did you see the way Rawhide was fussing over him?
I saw.
Bo started reloading his Colt, and Scratch began thumbing fresh cartridges into each of his Remingtons in turn as the two Texans walked down the street toward Dr. Summers' office. Behind them, the livery stable continued to burn, casting the light of its destruction over the body of Jonas Mikhail.
I swear, if you two stay in Whiskey Flats much longer, I'm not going to have room for any more patients.
What about Marshal Braddock?
He'll be fine. The bullet missed anything important and went straight through him. He lost enough blood so he'll be laid up for a while, regaining his strength, but in a month or so, he ought to be fine. Especially with Pamela Abbott helping me look after him.
I heard that, Doc. My name's Rawhide, dang it.
Can we see him?
Of course. Just don't tire him out too much.
Bo, Scratch, and Chesterfield Pike all crowded into the little room where a bandaged-up Jake Riley lay in bed, with Rawhide perching a hip on the mattress beside him.
How's things in town?
Pretty quiet now.
Livery stables burned to the ground, but the buildings around it got wet down enough so that they didn't catch on fire. It's mighty lucky if you ask me.
Yeah, and it was lucky that you and Bo discovered what Mikhail was doing.
I don't know about that. He would have overstepped himself sooner or later. Fellas who let greed get the best of them always do, sooner or later. With Mikhail, it just happened to be tonight.
Say what you want, but you and Scratch have a knack for running smack dab into trouble.
Yeah, I don't reckon we can argue with that, Marshal.
Rawhide, you don't mind if I talk to Bo and Scratch alone, do you?
You heard what the doc said. You're not supposed to tire yourself out.
It'll just take a minute. Anyway, all the representatives of Law and Order and Whiskey Flat shouldn't be here together. What if there's some more trouble tonight? I want a couple deputies out there keeping the town safe. You and Chesterfield there are elected.
Well, all right, but I'll be back to check on you later.
She stood up and left the room, taking Pike with her. Riley gestured toward the door.
Shut that, will you?
Something on your mind, Marshal?
Yeah. I don't think I can go through with it.
Through with what?
You know, swindling the folks in town by pretending to be John Henry Braddock.
Seems to me you meant it when you told Mikhail you were Braddock.
That's the way it sounded to me, too.
Well, who's to say it couldn't really be that way?
You mean you just keep on pretending?
It's not exactly pretending. The real Braddock is dead. Nobody would ever know the difference, especially if... if I could be a good marshal for these folks. And I think I can. I'm learning how.
You are at that.
And I'd have Rawhide and Pike to help me, and a good judge in Harry Winston.
Sounds like it might just work out.
And you fellas too, of course.
Now, there's where you're wrong.
We gotta be riding on.
But why? If I can settle down here, there's no reason you can't too.
Well, we've been on the drift a lot longer than you have, John Henry. Putting down roots is something that Scratch and I, well, we just can't do it.
There might be some place out there we ain't seen yet, and some trouble we ain't gotten into.
But, I can't change your minds, can I?
Not hardly.
Is it because of that wanted poster?
Wanted poster?
You can't fool me. I saw the way both of you reacted when you saw one of those reward dodgers. The one you put in your coat, Bo. It had your pictures on it, didn't it? You're wanted, and you don't want people here to find out about it.
That's not quite it, John Henry. But I reckon you got a right to know.
Bo reached inside his coat, took out the paper he had put there earlier, unfolded it, and smoothed it out so that Riley could see it. Riley's eyes widened in amazement as he recognized the man in the drawing on the poster.
But that's...
John Henry Braddock. Or at least the fellow we thought was John Henry Braddock. The one who died in that avalanche.
That says his name is Halliday. It says he's wanted for murder.
That's right. Bart Halliday's a hired killer and an outlaw.
But he had the badge. He had the letter addressed to John Henry Braddock.
Only one thing makes any sense.
Halliday ambushed and killed the real John Henry Braddock and took his place.
Why would he do that?
Same reason you pretended to be Braddock. He figured on taking the town for whatever he could. Of course, in your case, things worked out a mite different.
Yeah, I reckon they did. If McHale was responsible for the rustling and the gun running, why did he hire a lawman like Braddock in the first place? Wouldn't he have been afraid that Braddock would find out what he was up to?
I'm sure he didn't want to, but the rest of the town leaders pretty much boxed him in, so he didn't have any choice. He had to just hope that Braddock wouldn't interfere with his plans.
Like we did.
I still have a little trouble believing that Dodge Emerson wasn't behind all the trouble.
Oh, you'll have to keep an eye on Emerson. I don't think he's crooked, but he's ambitious. One of these days, he's liable to be the mayor of Whiskey Flats. You may be working for him.
I guess I'll have to deal with that when and if it happens. It'd sure be easier if you two were still around, though.
Sorry, John Henry. I think we're heading south.
Been a while since we've been to Mexico. Tequila and plump, brown-skinned senoritas.
Chili so hot it'd make your eyes water.
Pretty little senoritas.
Bo took hold of Scratch's buckskin jacket and tugged him out the door. The Texans might not leave Whiskey Flats right away, but in their minds, they were already on the drift again, answering the call of the frontier, bound for new places and hoping that at the end of the trail, there would be peace this time, instead of some new ruckus. After all, they couldn't keep riding into trouble forever, could they?
Sidewinder's Massacre at Whiskey Flats is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Tim Getman, Sherry Simpson, Elliot Dash, Thomas Penny, Terrence Aselford, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Andy Clements, Richard Rowan, Dolores King Williams, Jonathan Watkins, James Konacek, Tony Nam, and Johann Detweiler. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. Original music by Brian Patton and Johann Detweiler. Title theme by Brian Patton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Sidewinders, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man, as well as The Last Gunfighter, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other Graphic Audio thrillers.
The following preview is of a Graphic Audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
In those days, there were heroes and villains, and darkness walked the earth. There were dragons to be slain, captured princesses to be saved, and mighty deeds to be accomplished by knights in shining armor.
Go forth and slay a dragon, my son.
Sounds so easy when you say it. Sounds even easier when those bloody minstrels sing about it.
Robert.
We're being watched, right?
Right.
What do you want from me?
I'm looking for a dragon.
To start with, you've got to pass clean through the Darkwood and out the other side. And there's damn few have done that and lived to tell it. Deep in the dark woods, something is stirring. Something awful!
I can take care of myself.
Hideous monster! I, Prince Rupert of the Forest Kingdom, do hereby challenge ye! Come forth and fight!
You're a prince, you said?
Yes.
Do you by any chance rescue princesses? I've got one here, and she's driving me crazy.
You're holding a princess captive?
Shh! Keep your voice down. She'll hear you. I'm not holding her captive. I'll be glad to see the back of her.
What's wrong with her?
Dragon!
That's what's wrong with her.
Hello, Prince...
Oh, my hero! You've come to rescue me!
Well, that's partly...
I knew you'd come!
Well, yes, glad to be of service.
Now get on with it.
Get on with what?
With killing the dragon, of course. That's what you're here for, isn't it?
Ah, well, the dragon and I have talked it over, and I'm going to take him back to my castle alive. And you too, of course. Princess Julia, you have two choices. Come back to my castle with me and the dragon, or stay here on your own.
You can't leave me here.
Watch me.
You're the worst prince ever.
Well, I see you've already got something in common with my father.
Prince Rupert? Princess Julia? Approach the throne. Rupert, can't you do anything right?
Not much. Sorry I couldn't oblige you by getting killed during the quest.
Your Majesty, we do have a serious problem to discuss. Time is running out, Your Majesty. We've already lost three of the outlying villages to the demons, and every day more of the forest falls under the shadow of the Long Night. Demons run ahead of the Darkwood, slaughtering all in their path. We must make a stand against the darkness, while we still can.
Once in a blue moon, magic is loosed in the world. Wild magic, to create or destroy, strong enough to reshape reality itself on the night the blue moon is full. We have 7 months until that night. 7 months in which to find an answer to the darkness. If we fail, the Darkwood will spread over all that is. Civilization will fall. The Long Night will have no ending, and the world will belong to the demons. Prince Rupert, you must journey to the Dark Tower and there summon the High Warlock.
And the High Warlock's our only hope against the Darkwood?
Looks like it.
Then we're in deep trouble.
It's a hard, bloody journey to the Dark Tower, my friends. And you'll be facing the worst odds of your career. Most of you won't be coming back. If we make it, they'll sing songs about us forever. Everybody, run! Now!
Rupert, what in the world did... We're not going to make it outside, sire. We have to stand and fight.
It'll kill us!
If you've a better idea, I'm open to suggestions.
Even as we speak, my champion and my younger son, Prince Rupert, are on their way to summon the High Warlock, that he may return to the Forest Land and set his sorceries against the darkness.
You'd bring him back? After what he did?
Desperate situations call for desperate remedies. I have therefore decided also to reopen the old armory and draw the katana from its scabbard.
The Sword of Compulsion has been forbidden to your Majesty's line for over 4 centuries.
The situation has changed since then.
A king rules by the consent of his people, not because he has a magic sword that compels their obedience. Do you think the barons will stand idly by while you employ such power?
Many tales are told of that time. Tales of steadfast bravery and daring do.
Unicorn, you'd better find a tree to hide behind and stay clear of the fight. I don't want you getting hurt.
I'm way ahead of you, Rupert!
Don't just stand there. Get him, lads!
He's got a sword, boss.
A big sword.
And look at those scars on his face. And there was all that dried blood on his armor. He must have slaughtered hundreds of people.
Stop messing about and kill the traveler!
You want him dead, you kill him!
This is not one of those tales.
At least get his horse.
Horse! I'm a unicorn!
Horse, unicorn, what's the difference?
I'll be afraid later when there's time. Oh, I'll light up the crepes for me, and I'll skewer the lot of them. I'll show them a shish kebab they won't forget in a hurry.
Did you really think you could threaten me in my own court and get away with it? You're a fool, Sir Bedivere, and I do not suffer fools gladly. Bow your head to me or lose it.
You dare laugh? We're running out of time. There's a blue moon rising.
The dark will not take me this night!
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Blue Moon Rising, Part 1.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.